Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to another edition of the Litigation Psychology Podcast, brought to you by Courtroom Sciences. I am here, Ava Hernandez, with my colleagues, Dr. Steve Wood and Dr. Bill Kanaski. Glad to be talking with you all on this Friday afternoon. How you doing, Steve and Bill?
I'm good. I have a feeling Bill's not quite as good as me, but I am good. Thank you, Ava.
I am not good. I am unwell. And I'm not going to get into it. I'm just going to say my two favorite sports teams epically let me down last night. And because this won't post for a month, right? So no, it's not in real time, but everybody knows who it is. And I've been getting beat up all morning, beating myself up, getting beat up by others. It's been a horrible day. I can't, if I look at my phone, I'm just getting worn out by people. But that's the price you pay when you're passionate about your sports teams. And that's all I got to say about that.
Mm-hmm. I love the British accent there at the end. Well, thank you. Yeah, Bill had given us a little bit of a forewarning that he had a rant for today.
I do have a rant.
Oh, that's not your rant. I was going to say
no.
That was a
pretty No. No, I have a rant that I have not told you about this, but I would like your honest feedback.
Yeah.
I'm big in the openness, honesty. It's people get too bent out of shape over things.
You're probably in the wrong, Bill.
Yeah.
Whatever
exactly.
It is.
Right. But, people don't like criticism or feedback. And not everybody, when you do a podcast, right? I mean, you're going to get feedback. It's not going to be 100% positive. If you're on LinkedIn, you're not going to get 100% positive feedback. We publish a lot of papers together. You're not going to get 100%, right? There's going to be some percentage of, we work with witnesses. We don't get 100% positive feedback there. We've talked about that. So I received three. This is kind of like a viewer mail segment, a mini viewer listener mail segment. And I got to read you this stuff because it's kind of funny, but I want you. Okay. So number one, you're not going to believe this.
Oh,
all right. And these do not start, dear Bill. They do not start like that. Okay. Here goes the first one. Bill, all of your LinkedIn posts are narcissistic and self-centered. That's the first sentence. Any comments on that? Just want to let that go. Let that simmer.
Yeah.
The second sentence is you give away too much information all for the greater good of the defense bar. That is stupid. I got a message. Now, this is someone that is not an attorney, but someone I know who this guy is. He is not an attorney, but he works in the defense industry. He did work for a corporation, now has, I think, his own private consulting company in like the safety risk area. So that was the first message I got. My reply to that is, I am who I am. This is the version of me that you're getting. If you don't like it, don't follow me on LinkedIn. Don't listen to the podcast. What do you want? I'm not going to go changing because you don't like. I mean, I try to be confident in this job. I mean, if you're not confident, I mean, you're not going to, no one's going to hire you. And we work with really tough cases. And I've been doing this for a long time. And I try to come across as confident. I think narcissistic's a little overboard. But what are you going to do? Not everybody's going to be happy with you. So that was the first one. I see you two are very talkative on this.
Yeah,
one.
Well, I mean, I'm processing all of it. But I think it goes back to, I don't know about us giving away everything we're trying to help the defense bar. Yeah, I don't think we're selling the farm here. I mean, we're not talking
published
about
papers. We do this and somebody doesn't like that for whatever reason.
And I think I'm always kind of immediately a little bit, it gives me pause when people want to protect and keep information and knowledge to themselves, right? I think that always gives me a little bit of pause is who is that serving when you want to be the only one that knows about something, right?
Yeah. So, and again, I've given thousands of speeches at this point. And like I've always told you, 80% of the people always love the speech. 20% hate it. They hate me. They hate the speech. They hate the way I do things. They don't like my personality. And that's just the way it is. And I get that. If you don't like me, that's fine. Go hire somebody else. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But the fact that you send me a message and call me a self-centered narcissist, kind of unprofessional. I think there's a better way to handle that. So that's number one. Okay. Number two, you're both going to love this one. Number two, Bill, you are dead wrong. This is after I posted something on LinkedIn about you can't win a deposition. Corporate reps win depositions all the time. And I want my corporate rep to explain as much as possible, because that often leads to cases settling for a much better value.
Yikes.
I don't know what universe this individual's now this is from a defense attorney. Mm-hmm. Who read something when we said, you know, you can't win a deposition. Mm-hmm. And you get, you know, a lot of corporate reps or defense witnesses get into, you know, explain. And they end up, you know, stepping in a pile of dog shit eventually. Mm-hmm. Or they end up going into amygdala hijack. They get very defensive. I think, so maybe he's misreading this. The corporate rep or any other defense witness needs to give effective explanations. And that's part of what we want them to do. Mm-hmm. But I think a lot of those witnesses can go overboard. Mm-hmm. And oversell their stance and talk too much and volunteer information, get emotional, get defensive, get argumentative. And before you know it, they're not really being good witnesses. They're being very argumentative. They're being defensive. And I think that's a big turnoff to jurors. So can corporate reps or defense witnesses give really good explanations that will help a case? 100%. Mm-hmm. I think it's how you're giving that explanation. If you're trying to get the case settled or trying to win the case at the deposition, I've never seen that in my career. So,
right. I think when we say, you know, you can't win a deposition, it's not saying that so you just lie flat, hold up your hands and kind of let what happens to you happen to you.
Yeah.
There's a way of, especially if you've got a really sophisticated witness, like a corporate rep, someone that can subtly and eloquently, succinctly and carefully push through defense themes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Right. The idea that a corporate rep on the defense side is going to walk out of there going, I defeated them. I think that's hard to envision that happening. I don't know that I have seen it.
I've never seen it. And again, it's like we've all seen the videos, right? And transcripts of these witnesses that I'm describing that are trying to win. They're not even answering the question on the table. Like, well,
that's the problem.
They're off the rails, just talking about whatever they want to. That's what I'm talking about. Right. I don't think that's right. I think if you're a good listener, you're a good thinker, and strategically you've worked with your team, you can give fantastic explanations that won't win the case, but certainly could get it, you know, hopefully right. Settled for the right value, but then also come across as very professional and reasonable and, right. And confident.
Right.
So,
right.
So that was message number two. Third message.
Oh man, I can hardly wait.
They just
got
progressively better.
Yeah. Bill, why do you always look so angry? I've been accused of having resting bitch face. My family told me I had it. I'm like, do I have resting bitch face? And they're like, yeah, you kind of do. And I'm going, really? Because I don't feel negative. Like, am I just getting old and grumpy? Steve, do I have resting bitch face?
But what's funny though is I know you very, very well, and some while you seem angry and grumpy, you are actually one of the more positive people. I think maybe it's the rant. When you rant, everybody just assumes that's what you're doing, is walking around ranting all the time.
I got to get out of my system.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
you don't want it to build up like a pressure cooker. What right. Do we do with the witnesses? Right. We let them rant. We yes. Let the witness rant for the first 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Get it out of your system. Otherwise, it's going to come out during the dep. So I see this as a positive. Release the pressure, right? Pressure valve.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think that we're also uncomfortable with the full expression of emotions like frustration or anger or resentment, right? You're not supposed to feel that. So there's kind of a discomfort with even expressing them. Whether or not we're supposed to feel them, we do, right? So nothing wrong with expressing them. And also I resonate. Mm-hmm. I've been told that before. When I used to do public transportation a lot more here in Chicago, I had someone come up to me, a friend, and say, I saw you on the bus and I didn't even say hi to you because you looked so mad. I was like, I was listening to
you. It's a deterrent. See, maybe maybe it's a good thing.
Yeah. Right? I mean, I'll
take
it.
People talk to me.
Great.
If I look angry, like I want to punch somebody, I ain't messing with that dude.
On the Chicago red line, I will take it. Don't talk to me.
Like on Southwest Airlines, no one talks to me.
Yeah.
So I kind of like, so I think there's a positive to maybe, so maybe I keep, maybe I work on the first two, I keep that. I don't know. We'll see. But anyway, that's my rant. And again, anybody that wants to contact me and give us feedback on the podcast or one of our papers or a speech or whatever, I'm totally open to that. And if you're going to behave like a child with the way you do that, that's fine, because that's the way I'm going to treat you. But if you want to be professional, and if, and by the way, I've had other people do this where I say, hey, come on the podcast. You and I could be on the pod. We'll debate this issue. Then they ghost me. They want no part of coming on here to talk about the actual issue. I'm like, why are we doing this? Like, let's just get on the podcast and talk about it. I want you to express your opinion. And oh no, they want no part of that. So, who knows?
Yeah.
All right. So what do you want to talk about?
All right. Well, thank you for that rant. That makes more sense than the first one. I was wondering, man, that's an awful. You forewarned us and everything, and this was so chill. So thank you, Bill.
There you go.
And yeah, this was, I think we all wanted to kind of gather and spend some time talking. I mean, when we're recording this, it's the end of March, and boy, Q1 just flew by, at least for me. I
Yeah.
blinked and it's April. And we just wanted to kind of get together, connect, and talk a little bit about what we've been seeing in the last 3 months. What are some trends maybe we've been noticing, you know, changes that we've been noticing, things that are interesting or issues that have come up in the last 3 months that we just wanted to kind of bring to each other and talk with each other about a little bit. So, kind of curious to hear from both of you. Steve, maybe you want to start us off with, you know, a couple of things or one of the things that you've been noticing in the past few months that's been interesting or unique to you lately.
Yeah, I think one of the things that is coming up more often for me, and you and I saw it together when we were actually working on a project, and we're actually going to write a paper on this, but it's the idea that there's this thought that witnesses should remember every little detail, both plaintiff witnesses, fact witnesses, corporate reps. Jurors just assume that something happened 4 years ago and you're getting asked a question, and let's, if it was a traumatic event, there's an assumption that because it was a traumatic event, it should have burned everything into your memory, and that you should remember what was said to you, what you were wearing, what you were doing, where it was at. And when you can't, and witnesses can't, because time has passed and that's not how memory works, jurors are like, oh, I don't believe that. They're making stuff up. How do you not remember that? But I think one of the other interesting things was, is that we saw, and I think what really started to resonate with me was the fact that when the plaintiff couldn't remember something, they got a pass because, oh, well, they're claiming a traumatic brain injury. One of the fact witnesses on the defense side doesn't have a traumatic brain injury. So therefore, when they can't remember something, it's because they're making it up. So it's just interesting how jurors are doing these mental gymnastics to justify why one witness can remember something and another witness can't.
Yeah, I
Very, very, very interesting.
super interesting stuff. And I remember at that focus group, we were kind of trying to tease out with jurors a little bit what that was about and bringing up some stuff like, well, would it be understandable if you've gone through a traumatic event that that would actually be something you wouldn't remember? Would you want to kind of shove that in a box, lock it, put it to the side, and not go over that in exact definite detail? And while people could understand that and empathize with that, ultimately it felt as though the group was still sticking to that bias, right?
And I think
Did you
that's, that
ask them
goes
that at
back
the
to,
end? Did you ask them that at the end of the project
we did,
about the
yes. We
family?
did.
Okay, so trial attorneys, listen up. Here's how you get around this. You bring this up in voir dire, and you bring up this topic that you talk about in the focus group. You do that in voir dire. Right. So when you know this is coming, you tip them off to it, saying, hey, you know, some witnesses remember a lot, some stuff. Some people will have tried, maybe you've had some trauma in your life where you don't really remember stuff. What do you think about that? Because some of these witnesses may remember some stuff, maybe they don't remember. And you get that going, right? And so you do that before the witnesses even testify, usually results in a lot more latitude with the judgment on the witnesses. Whereas if you never touch that, then the jurors are doing your mental gymnastics, because they come in with these assumptions that, hey, these witnesses are testifying, they better have their shit together, they better know what they're talking about. And when they don't know something or don't remember, it really gets used against them. So I think you tip them off in voir dire.
And I think that's a really good idea, because you know what's funny is what you see is, and it goes back to how we always talk about juror decision making, seeing things through certain lenses. And Ava and I found that when it was someone who was holding it against the defense witness and allowed the plaintiff witness to not remember, they tended to skew more plaintiff.
Right.
And when it was that when they gave them a little bit more grace, a little bit more leeway, shockingly, they were more defense oriented. So it goes back to just showing that they were using that as a way to help inform their decision making by saying, oh, well, he can't remember things, so therefore it justifies me to side with the plaintiff.
Peace.
Right. Yeah. Well, really, really interesting stuff. So I think that kind of tipped us off, Steve, or you had the idea to, you know, start diving into that in a little bit more detail, because that's a pattern that I've definitely been noticing that came up in a few focus groups since then. I talked to you about it, where I'm noticing that's coming up a lot.
And on that topic, I'm going to kick it to both of you. I'll flip it here, Ava, and I'll ask the question on this one, but I want to get you and Bill's thoughts on one of the things, though, that could potentially contribute to that is whether or not attorneys are sharing documents with their witnesses during prep. And how many times have we seen where an attorney says, well, I'm not going to show them this, or I'm not going to show them that, they're better off not knowing it, but we know that's going to come up in the deposition. So talk to me about that.
Well, here's the thing. This is the point in the witness training where I go like this. Hey, I'm not an attorney. This ain't my case. I'm a psychologist. I could talk about psychology all day long, but that's a legal issue, and that's a legal strategy issue. And now I know, like, there's certain instances, for example, which I do think is very important. If you have a witness that's going to be deposed and they've read the depositions of other employees, they're getting questioned about it. And right. So oftentimes defense counsel will read parts of it to them to educate them. And then that's not reading the dep. That's having a discussion with your attorney so that the witness knows what other witnesses said. That's how you get around that. But yeah, I've seen things like, well, I don't want to show this person this document or this email because then they're going to have to say they reviewed it and then testify about it. And yeah, I mean, I think inevitably any good cross-examiner is going to say, hey, yeah, here's exhibit 24. Can you identify this for me? Oh, you haven't seen it before? Well, it's one of your documents. Here we go.
Right.
So in most cases, they're going to get questions about it regardless. I guess I err on the side of caution and preparation and going over the documents with them. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, what's the strategy? The deposition, I wholeheartedly agree with you, Bill. That's kind of a showing witnesses prior testimony is a little bit of an aside here. Yeah. But documents like police reports, photos, videos, whatever kind of factual evidence documents that we've got. Yeah. You know, I wonder, what are we trying to achieve by not showing the witness that prior to the deposition? Is it so that the witness can confidently say, I can't speak to this, I don't know anything about this, I'm just kind of looking at it, but I can't really answer, you know, in-depth questions about this? And then is that useful? Because if those snippets, I've certainly seen in mocks and focus groups where those snippets get pulled out of just a witness going, I know this was my accident, but I have no idea what you're talking about. And jurors don't typically appreciate that. They want somebody who was involved in something to have done their homework, to have gone back and reviewed things, to be confident in kind of what went on. I rarely see where people kind of going, I don't know, works well for their perception to a jury, right? So it can backfire. Yeah.
And I guess, like I say, it goes back to what type of witness. But yeah, we've all seen where it goes, wait a second, so this accident occurred 4 years ago? Yep. You're the corporate rep? Yep. And you're telling me you haven't seen this video?
Right.
That's correct.
Exactly.
Okay. And I can tell you, and we all know plaintiff attorneys sometimes will love to just get the I don't know type answers. They don't even care. They just want the I don't know so they can say, ladies and gentlemen, look at, they haven't even done anything. This is how much they care about it. They haven't done an investigation. They haven't done this. They haven't done that. But they want to come in now and say that they care about it.
Right.
Yeah.
It's like where the legal strategy conflicts with behavior, right? Because on the legal side, it would be real nice and succinct and clear cut to say, I never saw it, can't speak to it, right? But when someone looks at that from a human behavior perspective, it doesn't come across the way that from the legal side, they'd like it to, right? On the human side, it just feels like someone's throwing up their hands, pointing fingers, or just saying, I didn't bother to do my due diligence when someone got hurt or killed, right?
Yeah.
Think and it Bill, looks maybe good. you'll get some maybe you'll get some feedback from some attorneys on this about why that happens. It'll be a little
Yeah.
bit more positive than the other feedback.
Well, we'll see. We will see.
TBD.
Yeah.
TBD. And kind of building off that point, Steve, something that I've noticed, especially in corp rep preps that I've done recently, is it feels as though prep may be the first time, or shortly before prep is the first time that a corp rep has picked up any documents or taken a look at the case or has kind of been brought into what's going on, right? Which may just sort of be a lot of the time how the process works. We're not sure who our corp rep is going to be until the point when they're, designated. So sometimes it just works out that way. But I've had it happen a few times recently during prep where, as the corp rep is reviewing all of these documents, they're realizing they can't defend this care, or they can't defend this case, or they have a problem with the legal strategy that's being put forward. And then in that prep moment, we're kind of having this issue of, oh man, our person that's supposed to be able to speak to our strategy can't ethically, morally, psychologically, for whatever reason, actually do that. Uh-oh, what do we do with this, right? What did the last 7 months of discovery get us, right? Because only now are we figuring out that that's not going to work out in real life. And that's been coming up a lot for me lately. Has that happened to any of you all? You're sitting there in prep, especially with a corp rep, and all of a sudden they're going, I can't talk about this. I can't do this. I can't defend this.
Yeah, there's a lot of work to be done, and I don't think a lot of corporate reps that are particularly doing it for the first time appreciate the amount of work
Yeah.
within each of these topics. And I know everybody's busy. It's an exhausting, high burden process for
Yes.
the corporate rep. And I see when bad things happen, I've seen that process either not get respect or just not enough time given to the process, and then they go into their depth and they just don't have the preparation skills necessary, and they look silly.
Right.
They look silly. And then plaintiff's counsel is like, I sent you these topics a month ago. I sent a month ago, did you not
Right.
do your homework? And it looks really, really bad.
That's what I've run into a little bit more, Ava, is more or less of going through the topics and then realizing, oh wow, I have a lot of homework to do. Oh God, the depo's in 2 days, and I don't know this answer, I don't know this answer, and I don't know this answer. And it's like, well, you're on the hook for it, so you better go figure it out. That's been more what my experience has been when we come in later.
I've definitely seen that as well.
Is it
So
my turn?
yeah, Bill, I was gonna, what have you been
Okay.
seeing on the ground?
Okay, well, at the since I'm on a roll today, right, might as well keep riding this wave of positivity. Because I'm sure what I'm about to say is going to piss somebody off. And I don't care. Because it is what it is. I am speaking somewhere shortly on a panel. And the panel is me, a defense attorney, and a plaintiff attorney. That's all I'm going to say. Okay. We're on the same panel to share our various views, right, on litigation, discovery, trials. I mean, which I think is pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool. I've done this a couple times before. In fact, I did it in Chicago, Ava, about 12, 13 years ago, where Steve Phillips, who's a fantastic plaintiff attorney in Chicago, and defense attorney, my client, and me, for the Illinois Bar Association, they had their conference, and like we were the keynote speakers, and the three of us went up there, and the case had settled, but we kind of all talked about how we approached the case. And they did their mock trial, we did our mock trial, we prepped witnesses, they prepped witnesses. And so we all went back and forth on how it went, and then kind of worked all the way up to the conclusion of the case. It was actually fascinating. And afterwards, Steve Phillips came up to me, and he was super friendly, really good guy. And he saw that we had outmaneuvered him in a couple of areas. He's like, oh God, I should have held out. Why did I settle for that much? We were talking about the results of the mock trial. It was really, really cool. So this is something similar. So we had a strategy call this week, the three of us, to talk about, okay, like, here's the areas that we want to cover. I took some notes. I'm not going to tell you who the plaintiff attorney is. That would not be fair. I'm not going to tell you who the defense attorney is. That wouldn't be fair. But I took a couple notes here of some pretty fascinating things that this very well-known, super successful plaintiff attorney said. Number one, I win or lose my case in the first two depositions. I'm sorry, just to make sure my microphones work. Let me repeat that. I win or lose my case in the first two depositions.
Mm-hmm.
Hello? And you wonder why we push what we do so much. Because if those two depositions go well for the defense, the plaintiff attorney knows it's going to be an uphill battle from that point. If they go south, it makes life a lot easier, right? And so that's why deposition training, these witnesses is so important. Okay, so that's the first thing he said. And he says he wants to tell the audience that, right? The second thing he said, which I found fascinating as well, he says, I want to create the fight where the case is indefensible,
mm-hmm.
meaning what we would call threat facts. He wants to lay out facts, the bad facts of the case, in front of witnesses at deposition and beg them to try to argue, defend, or run away. Yep. It's like indisputable, you know, whether it be dash cam video, right? Or the medical record in a MedMal case, well, you know, the surveillance video in a premises liability case. He goes, I'm going to go to where the case is indefensible. And if they won't agree to the basic facts of the case, I'm going to hammer them and I'm going to win 100% of the time. And this is where the whole concept, my favorite word, or least favorite word, right? Depending on your perspective, pivoting. This attorney talked about pivoting. He's like, when witnesses start with this, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, oh, he's like, it's shooting fish in a barrel, stealing candy from a baby. Yeah, use whatever, you know, example you want to use. But I found those two things to be very, very telling that, and then he went on, we talked, and he's like, this is how defendants get themselves in trouble. When they wanted, like they're uncomfortable admitting, yeah, my driver was going 10 miles over the speed limit. Right. Rather, it's the yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but. And he's like, I get so much money out of that because if they do that at trial, they're dead. They know it. You know, increases the settlement value. I found those two things to be very interesting. And those are two of the pillars of our witness training program, are to prevent these types of things.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. And I find that really interesting to hear from a plaintiff attorney's perspective, especially how that's so helpful to them. Right. And I think, you know, I think that goes to with the yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but, the pivoting, the not wanting to own the facts, bad yeah. or good, right, is just fuel to the fire in 2024 with jurors yeah. who are more conspiracy minded is perhaps yeah. a bad way to put it. But we know, I mean, social science and political research overwhelmingly is telling us that in this day and age, end of March 2024, in the United States, we've got a pretty broad spectrum of people who are willing to, they want to see where something's wrong. They want to see gaps. They're very determined to find truth and accuracy as best as they can make it. And when people are jumping around or excusing themselves or pivoting away from the truth, bad or good, I think now more than ever, that's going to bite you in the butt.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I mean, you know, that again, and we know neurocognitively, this is fight or flight taking over with the witness because they hear the bad, you know, they hear the bad stuff, but it's concrete factual information. There's like, you can run, but you can't hide. And the more you run, the worse it gets. And their brain, if not desensitized and properly trained, is going to panic. And that's where that whole yeah, but, yeah, but, yeah, but comes. And it never works. It only digs the hole deeper. I mean, Steve, I know you text me earlier about watching a videotape.
Yeah.
And even witnesses that are really smart and well prepared fall into this really quickly, don't they?
Yeah, they want to add the context, and like you said, a savvy cross examiner can say, I appreciate you're trying to add your two cents in there, but my question was a little bit more simple. And then they go back and ask the question again, and then they give the long answer, objection non-responsive. Let's try this one more time. And obviously, all of that just plays into the idea that it brings it out to jurors who might see that person doesn't want to answer the question. It just makes you look stupid.
I read a depth this week, and this witness would not say yes to a basic factual question. Okay. And this plaintiff attorney was good. Okay. I mean, really, really good. He'd always, the next thing he'd say is, not my question. Let's do it again. Boom. Ready for this? He did it in this deposition transcript. It went a page and a half, guys. 11 times. 11 times. He goes, that's not my, you're answering a different question. I'm asking a basic yes or no. I just want you to confirm this fact. True? 11 times he would not answer the actual question. On time number 12, guess what the answer was? It's a wild guess. Just 12th time. The answer is yes, because the goddamn answer was yes on question number one. God
Yeah,
damn it. I mean, it's like,
but Bill,
why you, a
I
page
had
and a
more to
half,
say
two
though.
pages.
I didn't want to
So
say
he
yes 'cause I didn't want
thought,
to get tricked.
yeah. It's like, it's, isn't it true you didn't do X? Is the question, right? Well, it wasn't necessary because A, B, and C. Okay, not the question. Yeah, that's a different, that's a why not? Okay, my question is just, isn't it true you didn't do X? Well, it wasn't necessary, blah, 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 blah. Two and a half pages later, right? We're gonna sit here all day, Mr. Smith or whoever. And then finally, yes. Well, why? Like, why? Because you're gonna say yes anyway, because it's a concrete fact. And that's a big, big problem. And I just talked to this plaintiff attorney that told me I love that stuff. Because I want them to take up 3 pages of, because I'd like to play that to the jury to watch him not answering that question. You remember the Bill Clinton deposition of the evasives are so like you're rolling your eyes going, geez, Bill, come on. Yeah, you get something like that, it really puts you in a very difficult position when when the witness is trained, when that fact comes up that maybe doesn't look so good, they go, yeah, that's what happened. No, I did not make that phone call. Period. Because and then there's nowhere to go because it's over, it's done. The questioner is going to move on because they got what they got. But you're giving up one way or the other. You can kick, you can scream, you can fight, you can run, you can, but you can't hide. So
Yeah, at such a fundamental level, it goes to our wiring, right? Such a discomfort to have to own the truth, bad or good. And when I'm talking to witnesses, I always like to use myself as an example with that. And I tell them, I'm always chronically late, right? It's a problem. I'm Puerto Rican. I don't know what to tell you. I'm going to be 5 or 10 minutes late. It's a problem. I know that, right? It's caused issues for myself in my life. And I tell them, like last week, my husband asked me to go to dinner, right? And I was 30 minutes late, right? And he'll ask me, and I run them through a whole thing. I say, so if my husband said, hey, Ava, didn't I ask you to go to dinner 1 week ago, right? At 7 o'clock, and you said, sure, that time works for me. Yes. And then didn't I remind you 3 days later, hey, you still on for Friday, 7 p.m., still good? Yes. Then Friday morning, I actually said, still got an okay day? Yes. Okay. And then weren't you still 30 minutes late? Yeah, but I mean, I was stuck on a call. It's not my fault. I'm trying to work hard, right? And there's all of these excuses because of how uncomfortable I am with that fact for myself, right? And it just goes to our wiring. I don't want to have to face reality. And so much about the deposition process, and I think the legal litigation process, is facing reality, owning reality, not backing away from it, right? Jurors are perceptive in that way too.
And my wife is half Greek. They're 30 minutes late to everything. So here's the problem. All right. So in 3 decades of this relationship, I'm 30 minutes early to everything. She's 30 minutes late to everything. So if we have to do something together, like go over my sister's for a holiday, I'm out here by the front door tapping my foot like, let's go, let's go, let's go. I hate being late. She's up here like, you know, with the hair dryer. I'm like, what are you doing?
Right.
You're going to be there? Oh, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. And it's, right. it's yeah.
It's a common thing, right? This is all human stuff. It's human not to want to face reality. It's human to be so uncomfortable with that. But we have to, especially in a process where it's all about facts and truth and trying to get to the bottom of things. Right.
Yeah, I'm gonna bring. I'm gonna take two. I'm taking two slots here. I have my turn.
Go ahead.
I'm going
please.
Again because this has come up now every week, like for the entire year so far. These again, like everybody's lost their minds. I understand. I understand the whole post-COVID, the political atmosphere, World War III's. I get it. We've all lost our minds. We have very short fuses. These basic personal questions and depositions are making witnesses crazy.
Yes.
I mean, this witness is this week. She's a safety director at a trucking company. And we went through the day one of the training round stuff. I warned her about it. And then, you know, phase two is, you know, okay, now we're going to do mock questioning, right? It was like the seventh question, Ava and Steve. Seventh question of, you know, are you married? Do you have kids? What do you, right? And she goes, time out. I ain't effing telling them. They could go F themselves. And I mean, turned red, veins popping. This is a female, by the way. Veins popping out of her forehead. I ain't effing. And she's just laying down F-bombs. And by the way, I'm pretty damn good with the F-bombs.
Yes.
I think she surpassed, like, one of my greatest efforts.
Impressive.
She, like, hammers seven F-bombs down in 30 seconds. And I'm like, whoa, time. It's not relevant to the case. It's not fair. It's an invasion of privacy. I refuse to answer those questions. And I looked at the defense attorney. I'm like, do you want me to tell her? Or do you want to tell her? And we had this very sobering discussion. Prince, this happens every week. And especially females do not like when you ask about their children. I'll tell you that much, or their families. And it's, I want to like know how you guys deal with that, because I try to be very upfront with the, okay, now before I even show you what I'm about to show you, you're not going to be happy. Like, I start there. Like, I'm warning you right now, you're not going to be happy. They are allowed to ask you a certain subset of questions. I'm going to go over them. And then the next thing it goes, and the plaintiff witnesses have to answer this, the exact same questions. But here's what they're going to ask you to try to take some of the sting out of it. How have you guys dealt with it?
Well, I love that you said that, because that's funny. I think that that's one of the most difficult parts of witness prep. Sometimes I spend an inordinate amount of time there with the personal questions, because I agree. That is the thing that sets somebody off so quick, like that. So the attorneys will sometimes, oh, it's just the beginning. They're going to ask you this personal stuff. I go, whoop, whoop. These are the exact personal questions they're going to. We need to talk about this, because I have seen so many depositions where they freak out in the moment. You're asking about my kids. You're asking about my wife, my husband. How dare you? Right.
They get mad.
They get angry. And it's
angry. It's a, well, it's not fight or flight. It's fight. It's definitely fight. And here's the thing. And many defense counsel have admitted this to me in their prep, right? Without us, they totally skip over that stuff because they don't want to waste their time. They go right into the file.
Right.
And I cover it, because I'm like, imagine in questions. Okay, you're a safety director for any company. And on question seven of a 4-hour dep, you lose your shit.
Right.
And you fly off the handle. Well, now we have cortisol and adrenaline just pumping through your veins for the next 4 hours.
Right.
You're gonna be off the rails for the entire deposition.
Mm-hmm.
And with the question that should not get you that upset. So Steve, what I try to do is I try to desensitize to them. Like, here's some examples of the questions. I go, by the way, plaintiffs getting the same questions. They're not going to like them either. But I say they do this. It's more for a jury selection process. I go, listen, I go, if we go to trial, right, we don't want jurors on the jury that maybe their kids go to school with the plaintiff's kids or your kids. Like, that's a conflict. And like, we can work like that. So that's why we ask those questions. And many of witnesses go, oh, okay, I get it. But many other witnesses are like, screw this. I think this is bullshit. And they are not happy, and they need to get over it.
Mm-hmm. I talk about, like, I layer it in about how it could be potentially used for jury selection, and if this were to go to trial too. And I think that helps that tamper it down. I think the other thing that I do is I talk about social media, and I'm sure I know both of you probably do too, and touch on it, but how your social media is available, whether it's locked down or if your Instagram, your Twitter.
Oh, dude.
Not only is it just about making sure you're not posting anything, but at the same time, assume that plaintiff's counsel is snooping around on your social media as well. And luckily I prepped a corporate rep, or actually a CEO of a hospital, about it. And sure enough, at his deposition, plaintiff counsel pulled out a picture of him and his daughter snowmobiling.
Yeah.
And luckily he was ready for it so that he didn't react to it, and he just kind of blew it off and kept moving. So that's another area. But to your point, both of those things happen at the very beginning, and you need to be prepared to not go off the rails, because that 10-minute break that you're going to take, you're going to use to calm down. Bill, you can speak to this better than anybody, right? From a physiological standpoint.
Yeah.
Once it gets pumping, I don't think a 10-minute break is going to be enough to calm you down.
No. It takes half a day to get that stuff out of your system.
Mm-hmm.
It takes half a day.
Yeah.
I've told this story many a times. I was in downtown Indianapolis and I was driving to a witness prep, and I'm making a right turn, and this jogger with the earbuds, not even paying attention, runs right in front of me. I mean, I slammed on my brakes. I rolled down my window. I said terrible, horrible things to this person because I almost hit them. They never looked at me, and I'm beeping the horn, and I'm like, my heart's pounding on my chest. I go to this witness, like, I was useless. I was useless because I could not reel it in, because those chemicals, it's a neurochemical reaction. You get cortisol and adrenaline going, it's going to take several hours to get to your system. And I was not, speaking of unwell, I was not well that day. But that's the type of thing. So if somebody gets really angry early in the dep, arguably the very worst thing that can happen, because you can't think straight is the problem for the rest of the dep, because you're in amygdala hijack, you're in fight or flight, and you ain't coming out of it. And by the way, it's a pretty good from an evolutionary psychology standpoint, that's a good thing in life, right? It's a great survival mechanism, meaning if there's a threat, right, your brain keeps pumping out those chemicals to protect you for the next couple hours so that you're on high alert, right? So it's a good thing, right? So you're not falling asleep behind the wheel, like, okay, I'm ready now if somebody else tries to mess with me, right? The problem is you've lost your logical mind, and there's no way you could answer the questions effectively from that point forward. So, folks, tell your witnesses those personal questions are coming. Tell them the reason why, and they may not like it, but then also tell them the plaintiff witnesses are going to get these same questions. I said, you know what? Keep it simple. Answer them. They'll be over in 5 minutes.
Right.
And life will go on. If you fight on these, that's going to be a very long, difficult day.
Yeah. Wholeheartedly agree. I think it's, you know, normalizing it, right? This happens to everybody. This is how it goes. I tell my witnesses, you know, the many years I spent working for attorneys, you better believe I did this, to Steve's point about the social media research. I tell them I would get a name and I would go in, and let me tell you, I would spend hours, if not days, finding all of this information to bring back to the attorneys to utilize, right? This is what happens. I can tell you from a real world perspective, I've done it, right? And I normalize it. And then I also give them the why, you know, oh, it's for jury selection purposes, for these purposes, because I think we need to demystify this process for the witness, right? Not just say, this is how it is, sit down and deal with it. But give them the why, in demystifying it on a high level in some depth, really helps them to be able to handle that physiological response and not go into fight mode, and retain their cognitive abilities to testify well, right?
Yeah, I mean, and by the way, I mean, these witnesses have legitimate concerns, and they're these questions aren't fair, they're intrusive, they're completely irrelevant to the case.
Yes.
And the answer is yes, you're right. However, both sides get them, and it does play a key role in jury selection for both sides, because we want fair jurors.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but thing is, if you're a plaintiff attorney, hello, plaintiff attorneys, we know you're here. I always welcome the plaintiff attorneys. I have no problem with that. But if you're a plaintiff attorney with your client, you need to be having the same conversation. So if you're a defense counsel or a plaintiff counsel, see, we try to balance it out here on the Litigation Psychology Podcast. If you're a plaintiff counsel or a defense counsel, the same conversation needs to happen with your witnesses to say, here's what's coming. Don't get don't get bent out of shape because everybody's going to get these questions. Here's the purpose of the questions. Keep it simple. Move on.
Yeah. And from a clinical perspective, it's kind of, it's first you have to validate, right? Yeah. Before you get into working on the process. But if you just go, yeah, okay, whatever. I know you feel that it's unfair and irrelevant, whatever. Okay, whatever. But this is how it is, right? You can't skip over that part. You got to sit with them a little bit in the, I hear you. Yes, it is. You better believe it's irrelevant. I know it's unfair. That sucks. I'm there with you.
Yeah.
All right. Now let's move to how we can work with it. But you can't skip over that validation or you're never going to accurately get to where you're working with it, right?
I agree. I think we have time for one more quick one.
Yeah.
I wanted to share some positive stuff, unless you have something, Ava, that you wanted to.
No, Steve, please. Let's end on
you're going to share something positive?
Positive.
Yeah. Not on this podcast.
Yeah, that's right. I'm the positive guy here. Good cop, bad cop. I have to be the positive guy.
I sit here with my resting narcissistic bitch face over here.
But you just sit there and you're
you
with your judgy
paint. You be all positive,
on.
Dr. Wood.
Two things, and I'll touch on them quickly in the interest of time, but I think there's some good things that we're seeing, that I'm seeing in the defense side. First and foremost, we're seeing a lot more early case assessment. You know,
yes.
Bill, you were talking about how plaintiff yes. attorneys are doing this, and you know,
yeah.
plaintiff attorneys do a very good job
they're
of
smart.
Early case
yes.
assessment.
Yes,
defense
they do.
Attorneys doing a much better job now of early case assessment. How many times have we all been yeah. doing these pre- oh, yeah. assessments that are early on in the case before depots have even gone, or you're early in the discovery process.
Yeah. And you just did one with one of our friends. We won't say the name because I don't want to do that. But he called me immediately afterwards, and this was his quote verbatim. He goes, "I'm going into deposition now with answers to questions I never even thought of."
Yep.
Like how I'm going to ask questions now of their witnesses and their experts, I would have never gotten there without this project. And we did it in a half a day. So there's huge value with this early case assessment. And again, it's like, there's a block here. There's like this cognitive dissonance of, well, we can't assess the case until we have discovery done. Then we can assess the case. It's like, no, you don't know. You know what happened. You've got your dash cam video, or you got your medical record, you got your surveillance video or photograph, you know what happened. That's all we need, right? And that's what you need to see. How are jurors perceiving, right, the evidence in the case?
Mm-hmm.
Not slanted either way, no back and forth arguments between attorneys saying, no, here's what happened, here's what the evidence shows, what are your questions, how do you feel, what do you think, where are your concerns? You smell something fishy? Really? Where do you smell something fishy? That process will give you a ton of information that then when discovery starts going forward, you're going to be armed. And by the way, the plaintiff's bar does do a very, very nice job of that. And I mean, hats off to them. That's just a fact.
And that's what I was going to say. Yeah. And that's what I was going to say too, is plaintiff attorneys will talk about how they know what questions, you don't, they're a lot of times they're not willy nilly just asking questions in the deposition. They have figured out what the main questions are and what they need to key on and what are the admissions they need to get. They didn't just pull that out of a hat. They more than likely talked to jurors and focused on what the jurors thought was important. So to your point, our good friend was furiously writing notes about, oh, so I need to ask about this. I need to ask about that.
Yeah.
And yes, it I could see it tailoring and changing the way he was going to focus on the depositions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because once these depositions are in the can, they're in the can.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so if you learn, it's just all on the timeline, right? So if you learn how jurors feel about the evidence in your case, right? And you learn about that before the depths versus after. Well, if it's before the depths, knowledge is power. This is what we have a slide on this, Steve. Knowledge is power. Early knowledge is the best power.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Knowledge is power, but early knowledge is the best power because you can influence the future.
Right?
Now, that information is still very valuable, but if discovery is closed, like you lose power, right? Because you don't have the early knowledge. It's still great knowledge, but it maybe would have been better for you to get those answers earlier. Now, granted, I think early case assessment, I think the word early can be defined in several different ways. We have gotten calls where there's been a few depositions taken, and we've maybe played a couple of those clips during our, you know, during our project for the case assessment. And that's very useful as well. But again, taking a page from the plaintiff playbook, they will do multiple sets of these. They'll do one before discovery starts to get kind of the preliminary read. Then once discovery starts getting going, they will do it again and then learn, you know, they'll bring in what they've learned from the discovery so far, maybe play some of those witnesses. And then when discovery is closed, then they do it once they have all the information from a scientific methodological point of view.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful system. Very and we've smart. Been screaming, I've been screaming that to the defense bar for 20 years.
Yeah.
Right. And so that is really the right way to do things. And there are, we do have clients that have started to do it like that and have seen the results. So Steve, I would agree. So I see I've become positive by the end of this podcast.
I knew it.
I have seen some movement in the defense bar to do things a little bit more proactively in discovery from a jury research standpoint. And everybody we've done this for and everybody we've talked to has been 100% just over the top, beyond happy with the process, because I don't think they ever knew they could even do this, and they can and they are.
Yeah.
Right.
And the last thing, Ava, that I wanted to talk about on a positive note, I think it goes back to what Bill's saying too, is the defense bar is sharing a lot better too. I've noticed that a lot. I'm seeing a lot more communication where attorneys are linking up and saying, you go against this attorney a lot, hey, let's connect. Let's talk about what their approach is, rather than going, gee, you're having similar cases in the similar area space, we don't want to talk to each other because we're competing. They said, no, let's put our heads together and figure out a better way to approach this. And they're passing around depots, and they're doing a lot of things that, once again, the plaintiff's bar is doing to the defense side, where they're passing around 30B6 depots and strategizing too. So kudos to the defense bar. I've seen a lot more sharing of information than I saw recently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've also seen a lot of emails going around of, hey, I'm looking for an expert in this area, and seeing defense attorneys respond to that to kind of help each other out. I think the more they can help each other out, the better it is for everybody. And I know they compete and things like that, but I think there's a better way to do things. And if people are going to help each other and share, I think that's a really positive sign.
Mm-hmm. I think it goes to part of your rant at the beginning, Bill, which is, you know, why are we keeping our cards close to our chest in that sort of way? Why can't we share this information? Who does it serve if we're keeping it to ourselves? And having worked with the plaintiff's bar for so many years, I mean, I have never seen anything like those repositories and listservs that go flying on the plaintiff side. And I don't think we have a comparable version of that on the defense side at all, which I find very,
not even remotely,
but I mean, that kind of collaboration is so enormously helpful. Well, I have one more quick, tiny positive one that just real quick that I've been seeing a lot, especially on the defense side and with my witness preps and just in general, is I'm seeing a lot more acknowledgement and understandings from clients, from attorneys, of mental health and how mental health plays a role in all of this, and the understanding of how that's going to influence your case, your strategy, your witness on just a personal level, your witness's ability to testify, the way this is all going to play out down the line at trial. I'm seeing much more acknowledgement of that and willingness to kind of engage with that, again, with engaging with the actual reality of things rather than kind of coasting over it and wishing it was different because it'd be more convenient for our case. I'm seeing a little bit more acknowledgement of that.
That's a great point. So back to my story about the safety director, the female who dropped the, 37 F-bombs in 12 seconds. Really over the top upset about these basic questions.
Yeah.
Well, guess what we come to find out? Her sister, died from cancer 6 years ago. Or, I'm sorry, 6 months ago, not 6 years, 6 months ago. And she's still very, very upset about this. So anything about family, and I think she had somebody else, she had something kind of like what I went through a couple of years ago. It's like, wait, my mom, my aunt, and my cousin all die in 10 days? Like, what the, that's really difficult. I mean, one of them going is difficult to deal with. Three of them at once, it's like, wow, the whole world stops. It's a massive challenge. And she was in this type of position. But guess what? Nobody knew. That's not, she didn't advertise it to us. And we're like, God, why is this witness so angry and so upset about, like, something's off here. And so finally I'm like, okay, like, is there any, which I told you, I always do this. Like, what's going on in your life outside of this? You know, something going on, how's work? You may have some other stressor. A lot, I tell you, a lot of people are going through a divorce or bankruptcy. I mean, all kind of, people have all kinds of stressors. And she goes, well, it doesn't really, it's not relevant to this case. And I was like, it doesn't matter. If you're upset, it's going to hurt your testimony. And then she dumped all this about the two or three family deaths she had had in the last couple months. And she was devastated.
Yeah.
And would have never told us. So we've, at least we found it. But yeah, mental health plays a huge role. And I think asking those questions up front, just about how people are doing. And I like that one question is, what's going on in your life that may impair your ability? See, the question is, are you taking any medication that's going to disrupt your cognition, right? Yeah, that's important. I would like to know that. However, I also want to know, is there other things going on in your life that are maybe deeply upsetting to you that have nothing to do with this lawsuit, but maybe are affecting your concentration, your attention, your sleep hygiene, your diet, your health, general health behaviors? If those are issues, it's going to hurt your deposition because you won't be able to do the things we need you to do and see if anything's going on. Then if you find it, at least you can help them with maybe just letting them vent, or maybe they do need some professional resources and you can maybe help them point them in the right direction. It's very, very, very common.
Because that, you know, that angry response, 37 F-bombs of your safety director, it's not about that question. It is not about the question. No. Is, does anyone that you know, live in this county? That is, yeah, it's no. not the question. That yeah. question was the straw that broke the camel's back. That question oh, yeah. was the trigger. It's not about that. It's about yeah. death. It's about suffering. It's about something else where that yeah. is just touching that part of themselves where it all comes bubbling to the surface. And that's got yep. to be acknowledged because that's human. That's how I we agree. Roll. That's how we're wired. So we have to work with it. Litigation encompasses all this messy human stuff. It just does.
Yeah. And that's, by the way, just to be clear, that is women. That's men. That's Everybody. All age groups. It's you're, if you're human, there's a potential you're going on. Something's bothering you in your life. Right. And it could be anything. Right. But it doesn't matter who you are, how smart you are, how old you are, your sex. It doesn't matter. I think really, at least asking about those things to get a see, you know, how's this witness doing more generally in life, will be a very good predictor of kind of what you're going to be dealing with going forward.
Yeah, wholeheartedly agree. Well, glad that we could kind of end on a little bit more of a positive note and some of the good things that we're seeing happen. But this was fun. It was nice to kind of catch up with
I'm
you.
I'm smiling. See, yeah. I'm smiling. Right. Not resting bitch face.
It's always nice to talk about this stuff. You know, the year flies by and it's nice to kind of take a minute, kind of take stock and then see what's been going on and catch up a little
Absolutely.
bit.
Absolutely. We'll probably do this every quarter. We'll do this. We'll hop on. I'll just say, hey, here's what's happening.
Yeah.
From the trenches.
Yep. Yep. From the front lines, from what we're doing. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Wood, Dr. Konasky. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it. For everybody listening, thank you so much for listening. Thank you for being a part of this community and listening to what we've got to say. And reach out if anybody has any questions, if anybody wants to work with us, if anyone disagrees with us and wants to let us know.
Yeah.
Please.
You're doing a great job of that, Ava.
Yeah. I tell people, cut me off. Tell me if you think I'm wrong. I want to know, as sometimes then.
You have a complaint, email Ava Hernandez.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
Yeah, reach out to me, I guess.
A Hernandez at courtroomsizes.com. That's the complaint department. She will handle all of the complaints.
The positive ones, send Bill and Steve's way. How about that? We'll break it up that way. But please reach out to us on LinkedIn. Reach out to us via email. Our website, courtroomsciences.com. We've got plenty of articles and resources for people looking for information on all this stuff. But hope everyone has a great day. Take care. We'll catch you on the next one.
Thanks, everyone.